Nevada City. I'm with Charlie Mollica and Louis Forte, original members of the Impacts. Good evening, and thanks for joining me.
Good evening. Thank you very much. It's our pleasure.
Thanks, Brian, for having us.
Well, guys, where were you from?
We're from originally Ozone Park, Queens, New York.
How did you guys meet?
How did we meet? We met actually at a confraternity.
Yeah.
Nativity of the Blessed Virgin Mary was a school where I went, and they used to have a confraternity on Friday nights. At the time, I was singing with another group, and we were doing a show there, and Louie and Dickie and Dickie Aggett, the other fellow from the group, Dennis Bonagora, they were singing with another fellow. His name was Gussie Antico.
Oh, my God. Is he still alive?
Gussie Antico, and they were singing together, and before you know it, we started fooling around together, and the next thing was that I became a part of them, and then we then became the Impact.
So before we go any farther, if you could name each member of the group and what part they sang and or instrument that they played.
Okay, no instruments, a cappella only. The group went from 4 members to 5 members to 3 members later on in time. Let's start with the 5 members. Bass, Artie Riccio. Baritone, Dennis Bonagora. Second tenor, Dickie Aggett. And first tenor, Louis Forte. Lead, Charlie Mollica. And then, later on, Artie Riccio dropped out. He went into the service, got drafted. And then later on, Dennis Bonagora went on to other things.
Now, how old were you guys generally when you first got together here?
I got to explain something about our neighborhood, Ozone Park, Queens. That was the neighborhood where that's what you did. You sang. You stood on the corner, and that's what you did. You learned how to do that. That kept us out of trouble. And there was all little singing groups all over the place. And we used to compete with each other. And that's where Charlie and I, we all came together because of that, at that competition in that confraternity.
That's right.
Yeah. When we started, I was 13, yeah. 14 years old.
Yeah, Dickie was the youngest one. Dickie was, I think he was going to be 12. Louis was then the second one. I believe he was 13. Dennis Bonagora at the time. Dennis was probably 15, and I was maybe 15 or 16. It was somewhere in that field. The exact ages at the time, that's going back a lot of years.
And we used to get together, what, 3 times a week,
religiously. And rehearse at Boyd Avenue Station.
In the subway.
That was the train station.
To get the acoustic.
To go upstairs to get the acoustic, that sound, looking for the echo. Kenny Vance and the Planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what were a few of the other groups that were in your neighborhood?
The Capris, Charlie.
The Dedications.
Dedications.
Mikey Parkette, Kenny Jeremiah.
With Cookie Lorello.
Cookie Lorello was the Bells of St. Mary they made. What was the name of that? The Admirations. The Admirations.
Later on, the Soul Survivors,
right.
Which I was a part of at that
Expressway
point.
Expressway to My Heart.
The Expressway to Your Heart, which came out of the neighborhood later.
Brian, there were so many other groups there. I mean, more so groups that didn't release nothing. There was another group called the Dedications, another group, the Dedications. There was the Solitaires, not the Solitaires that you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
These were all groups, all people, all guys that just got together with a girl or whatever. And just, well, this is the name of our group,
down,
the Royal Airs.
Yeah, down the road in East New York, which was borderline to Ozone Park, Queens, was Vito and the Salutations.
Lenny Coco and the Chimes.
So you're doing all the contests, the singing. How did you get into the studio to cut a record? How did that all happen?
I believe that the first time, excluding the demos that we went into just did and did ourselves, you know, the first one was with Ali Stroiano. I believe, was it after? Was Ali after?
Make Up Your Mind and Climb Up on Your Rocking Chair
so
was first.
Okay, so Make Up Your Mind and Climb Up on Your Rocking Chair was with John Lindy
and Pete Antel.
We went into the studio.
They found us. They.
Oh, you know, I'll tell you where. I'm going to really buzz Louie. How we got involved with John Lindy is we did a show at Leone's in Long Beach. That was John Lindy's restaurant on Park Avenue in Long Beach. And when we did the show for him, he liked us, and he asked us if we would like to get together with him. Because at the time, we didn't have a manager or anything. We did everything on our own. And We wound up doing the show. He asked us. We said, okay. He put it together. It didn't cost us nothing. We went into the studio. We cut the record. And C'est la vie.
And that was for the Express label. And what year was that?
That must have been 63.
Yeah.
62 or 63. Yeah.
And Express Records then was a division, if you will, of Fargo Records.
Fargo, Lou Fargo.
Right.
And Fargo actually had several record labels, including Express. Did you ever have any contact with him?
No, the only thing I remember is when we is seeing Lou Fargo, and there was another gentleman there, and I cannot remember his name. John mentioned it to me, but we had met him at the studio.
Was that Gentile?
And I think it was Gentile, but I'm not 100% sure. The other gentleman might have been Gentile. But I know that we met Lou there. And that's the only time, and that's the only thing that we had to do with him.
You know, we rehearsed that song, as a matter of fact, over Charlie's house. We used to get together all the time. And we did all that our parts at the house. And we went into the studio and just banged it out. You know, it wasn't a lot of work in the studio
right. With
that. It was just come in and do your parts.
And then they provided the music accompaniment.
Music and everything was all done by them.
Did you ever have contact with any of the other groups on those labels, you know, the Dream Tones or Ricky and the Vassells or the Schoolgirls, the Aquatones?
One that I remember being at the studio was the Aquatones. The Aquatones were a part of Fargo Records.
That's very interesting.
They were a part of Fargo and Express. If you happen to go onto that website, you would see that the Aquatones were probably, if I remember correctly, the largest part of that label and also Fargo Records.
Yeah. Think back, did we do any shows
with them? No.
You know how they used to promote the label shows?
No.
Local fair or a local concert? I'm just trying to think.
Not with that. No, we never did. Not that I remember.
Tell me about some of the shows that you did do to help promote the record.
Well, you know what it is? We did most of the confraternities, which was St. Michael's, which was Nativity, at the time was Gate of Heaven, St. Fortunato's. These were all different churches and schools that had confraternities. We had done a couple of shows at
Jersey City.
Jersey City. That's what.
We did some shows with some. At that point, they were coming up too. They were the Four Seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Who weren't the Four Seasons at the time? They were the Four Seasons. They became the Four Seasons, but they were called the Four Lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were the Four Lovers. And they just were doing that. And
Journal Square.
Sherelle's.
Didn't we do Journal Square in Jersey?
Yeah, we did
Journal Square in Jersey, the movie theater, the big movie theater that was there.
But on those cards were the Ronettes.
It was Vito and the Salutations. It was I'm a Happy Man. The Jive Five.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland Stills and the Dubs.
Wow.
That's the show that we did in Harlem with the Jive Five.
At the Audubon Ballroom.
At the Audubon Ballroom.
Hey, you know what? It's interesting because it's triggering my brains. Who was promoting us at that time? Who was bringing us in? Who was bringing us around? It was somebody that was...
I don't know if it must have been John Lindy. It had to be.
You know, at that time in the business and our careers at that time, you know, we were just happy to work. We were just happy to sing. You know, it wasn't about the money.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about who you were singing with, what kind of card, what place it was. If there was a venue that you could
get into,
you can get into your singing, we did it.
Mm.
You know? And I think there was a local promoter. Remember that guy that used to take us around?
He lived in Ozone Park on 97th Avenue and 98th Street. Wow, I just can't remember his name. He lived with his girlfriend's parents.
He had a car. I remember that. We all used to jump in his car.
The problem is I can't remember his name, but he was a promoter at the time.
What kind of airplay do you recall for your record, and which side was it that was getting the airplay?
I remember Rocking Chair was getting played in the New York market, and a lot of DJs were flipping it over and playing Make Up Your Mind. It wasn't big, you know, I don't remember big airplay, but of course we never got any royalties or anything
that.
You know, so we don't know how far it took off, but they were playing both sides when they did.
And they being just New York, New Jersey, or did it get out from there?
We don't know.
I remembered, and in talking with John, was California is where it actually did better than the tri-state area, we call it, okay? That's where it did better. Doing better, what does that mean, Brian, to us? Doing better is that it was played on the air 20 times versus 3 times, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It didn't make no charts or anything like that, because if it did, then we would be talking a different story, but it was just played. And then it wasn't played, and that was the end of that tune, and here we are.
Which side did you intend to have as the A side for the play?
Climb Up on Your Rocking Chair was the side that they wanted.
And the reason for that Elsa White wrote that song, that woman, she wrote that song in a tribute to the President of the United States at that time, Kennedy. He had a rocking chair, and that was the whole hook on that thing, supposedly.
She was an elderly woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you had a good two-sider with it, because Make Up Your Mind as a B-side is just a great song.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
See, personally, we liked that better than Rockin' Chair. But you have a promoter or a manager or the production people. This is what they wanted. And you know what? When you don't have anything invested in something, you really don't have too much to say.
Hmm. Yeah. And Make Up Your Mind was closer to our roots.
Mm-hmm.
Rocking Chair was more of a hooky, gimmicky type thing, maybe to get us out there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was looking for that hook. If you remember, this was during the time of Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny,
Brian Hyland.
You know, the songs that were out that were...
Gimmick songs.
Right.
Yeah. Truer to the doo-wop was Make Up Your Mind.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So once you had it recorded, it got played on a few stations, didn't make the national charts. Did you attempt then to make some more records?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. We made another one with Ali Striano did it. And that was called A Tiny Little Locket, another gimmicky type song, cha-cha, tiny little locket, you know, type thing.
Which wasn't released.
That was never released.
Mm-hmm.
And then... from there, time went on, and we stayed together. We kept singing, we kept working, and playing in the local market here, and came across some people that took some real, real high interest in the group to produce some. It was over the top. It was out of the doo-wop realm, and it got more into the commercial sound. And great records. As a matter of fact, one of the records we did, well, all three of these records we did was with a 26-piece
orchestra.
Wow.
You know, violins, and it was really more of an entertainer type of, like a Vegas type thing coming into that, you know.
And who was involved in the production of those?
Oh, that was the man. His name is Angelo Muzzolino. And Angelo, as of right now, who I just contacted, and well, I guess we'll talk about that whole gamut in a while. But Angelo today is 84 years old. He still teaches part-time at
Delphi University
in Long Island. He was the writer, producer, director. He was the whole ball of wax. Angelo actually belonged to the Long Island Association of Composers.
And wasn't he the musical director for the Art Linkletter show?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm almost positive, but I can't say that. We can't say that because I don't remember.
And, you know, that's actually a good segue into your meetings with different people like Louis here on the phone and some others tomorrow. It sounds like you orchestrated a huge reunion, Charlie. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, my God. How many hours do we have?
Well, try to condense it a little if you can.
I will sum it up. It's interesting. The most interesting part is how it happened. How it happened was I have a whole load of 45s, and I have 4 or 5 of old Johnny Cash albums from when he was a kid that I decided I wanted to sell. Now, how do I sell this? I'm not going to do it on eBay. I decided I'm going to call, and I made a phone call through the newspapers to a collector. The collector came to my house. His name is Chris. It winds up that I know his brother, Peter, who is now with the casinos, the new casinos. Peter is a friend of mine, actually, who is a painter like myself. And we started to talk. And I said, well, I know your brother, and so on and so forth. And then I said to him in the long conversation, I said, Chris, can you do me a favor? I said, I'm looking for the longest time, a copy of my record. And he said, what are you talking about? I said, well, years ago when I was with the Impacts, we cut a record called Climb Up on Your Rocking Chair, the B-side of Make Up Your Mind. I had them all, I had everything, and I told them all about the other records that we did and the demos and so on and so forth. And I told them that they were all basically destroyed, destroyed by my sister and my nephews, and they spilled Coca-Cola and all this other crap. And he says to me, well, you know, I have like 10,000 records, and I know I don't have that, but give me a chance to reach out. He reached out, he went home, he called me back 20 minutes later, and told me I have the record. That's what started my mission. The record, I looked at it, I went downstairs, I played it, I had the chills all over me, and I said, you know what? I'm looking at this label and I'm seeing John Lindy and Peter Antell's name. He says, you know what? I gotta find them. I was on the telephone talking with my ex-girlfriend, and I'm telling her all about this. And lo and behold, she's on the computer at the same time and punches up, bingo, the Impacts come up all over the screen. And that's what started me on my mission. I then found John Lindy in Florida. I found Peter Antell in Hicksville. I then went on another mission to find Angelo Mussolino. And I wound up finding him through the association who told me that he was teaching at Adelphi. I called up Adelphi University's music department. I then got his telephone number. I called up Angelo and spoke with him. And then I basically came to a dead stop because there was only one more part of this pie that I had to put together. And that was Al Stroiano. And just this morning, I found Al Stroiano in Florida. At the same time, I contacted Louis. Louis is actually my brother because we've been together for so many years and we remain friends closer than any two friends could be. I then reached out and I got in touch with Dickie, Dennis, and Artie. And tomorrow we are going to have the Impact reunion along with everyone.
Wow, that sounds great.
I can't wait.
Boy, he's going to be singing and talking about old times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just, you know what it is, Brian? Just to be together after all of these years, that is good enough for me. And without the singing, without nothing, to just grab and hug one another, once that happens, it'll all lead into everything else.
Right.
Charlie called me in Florida and told me that he's keeping me in breath of the connecting the dots here.
Every move.
And each move became more exciting. And then when he said, hey, the other fellas from the old group, we're all going to meet Monday night. And he says, you know what, if you could, Babu, you know, it'd be nice. So here I am.
He called me up. I was at Walbaum, Brian. I was shopping because I was making my wife dinner that night. And I get a phone call, and all I hear is, Charlie, I'm coming. Oh, my God. That's great.
Louis, tell me what it is that you're doing these days.
These days, I didn't stay in the business. I had to get away from it. I'm in the waste service business. I'm in the garbage business in Florida.
And, Charlie, what are you doing?
I am totally retired as of the year 2000.
Excellent.
We still dabble. Charlie
dabbles, and I dabble. I still sing. I never stopped singing. I was singing at one time with the Chaperones. I was with them for about 2 years, 2.5 years. Actually, I went to an audition for the Fireflies, and they wanted me to sing with them, but it was a problem with myself living in Suffolk County, Long Island. Driving into Brooklyn to rehearse was just a big inconvenience, so I decided not to do that. And then the next move was my son called me up on the telephone and said, Dad, there's a group that's looking for a lead singer. Acapella, and P.S., that is Back in Time, of which I am still with today.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Louis, is there something that you might want to tell the audience that I may have glossed over that you want them to know about?
Just that, remember when I mentioned out of the neighborhood came groups, all different groups sprung out of it. In 1966, I was recruited to play with the Soul Survivors. I'm a guitar player, too. Soul Survivors were a group called the Dedications prior to being the Soul Survivors. You know Soul Survivors? They did the Expressway to Your Heart?
Right.
I think it was released in 67. And I went on the road with them till I got drafted into the Vietnam thing in the later part of 66. And meanwhile, Atlantic Records was after them to Leon and Huff wrote the Expressway. And we were starting to play around with that. And then I got drafted and they went on. They recorded it. Unfortunately, I wasn't part of that. But my buddy wakes me up at 6 o'clock in the morning and says, "Isn't that the name of the group you were with?" And I'm hearing it banging away on the radio. I think it got to number 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one of those timing things. And from there, came back. And when I came back, I had a family, you know. And I went on and I produced some groups, young groups trying to learn. As a matter of fact, an interesting side note, the NSYNC group. The group NSYNC?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Charlie even knows this. I'm looking at him talking to you. The NSYNC group, Charlie. They were a group of kids at a school in Orlando. I live close to Orlando. I live in Lake Mary now. And somehow, somewhere, the father of that group gave me a call to come and teach his teenage kid some basic harmonies. And in that group was Joey Fatone of NSYNC. He was about 12 years old, and he learned the basic harmony, the basic chords of harmony, and how to hold a note and stay tuned in. There was a couple of sessions in his house, and he later became, who he is today.
Right.
It's interesting how it goes in and out of your life, and it never leaves. It's a wonderful thing. What I'd say as a side note, kids should learn music. They should really learn music because it just stays with you.
Get the basics.
Yeah, get the basics and learn something. It's great.
Charlie and Louie, thank you so much for joining me tonight at KVMR-FM and telling me about your experiences with the Impacts. I sure do appreciate your time.
We thank you very much for giving us the time.
Yeah,
Ryan.
Great talking to you.
Make up your